You smell that, Pep?
I smell that.
You smell that? It smells like spring. It smells like the Masters. It smells like pimento cheese. And it smells like y'all are listening here on Chase and Birdies. Us two doing it again. Thank y'all for tuning in. My man, what's shaking?
Not much, man. It's Masters Thursday.
It is. Oh, my gosh.
And as you can see, the people probably, yes, sir, on the hat.
Yes, sir.
My Masters mug. And it is the week. It's one of the best weeks of the year because the NCAA championship just happened.
Yeah. Got that out of the way.
Got that out of the way. And there's a lot to catch up on. And today's episode brought to you by Red Vanley. Check them out at redvanley.com. I know I was rocking it all weekend with our boy Lee Trevino.
Yeah.
Feeling special. Good. Looking fresh. We'll get into that a little bit, but fill us in, dude. There is a lot going on.
Your boy Anthony Kim was 21 over this past weekend, so that's something to tell you about.
Yeah, he had a little trouble, all right?
I know, man. I'm just letting you know where he stands, so that's that. But no, dude, it's so excited. I'm so excited for this weekend. First major of the year. We got some of the boys from Liv playing in the Masters. We got old T-Gray teeing it up. What else could you want?
Did you see Greg Norman's comment about Taylor Gooch?
Yeah, he's the best iron striker he's ever
ball
seen.
Ball striker in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, bud, he's watching Augusta from his couch. How is he the best ball striker? To me, I can name 50 people that are better ball strikers than Taylor Gooch. Maybe he's a good ball striker, but, bud, you haven't done anything with it.
Yeah.
So he must not be that good.
Yeah, I don't know. Who you liking starting today, this weekend? I mean, you got one pick. That's it. You got one pick. Who you taking?
I know everyone's taking Scheffler. I can't do it. His putting suspect. I'm going the lefty. Don't even know how to say his name. I just won.
Yeah, he's. I like him.
And
he's
as Lee Trevino said, lefty, everything lefty.
Yeah.
Lefties do really well at Augusta. All the greens are right to left. Coming in, they can stop it. Whatever. So I'm going with him. Don't know his name.
Yeah, Batia.
But the guy that just won this past weekend, he's my pick.
I'm going with a horse I've rode in the past and has not done too well for me. But I'm going with Cameron Smith. I think he's got. I don't know. I think he. I just. I don't know. I know Scheffler's the obvious choice, but I mean you got Hovland too. But McIlroy played really well coming down the stretch this past weekend. But I'm going with Cameron Smith as my pick. You're going with the lefty.
The southpaw.
And that's that, guys. So I don't know if y'all out there listening, if you put any wagers on anyone, but some of these guys had great value. I mean, for shits and giggles, Tiger Woods plus 15,000. I know it's stupid, not going to happen. But even some other guys, like even Matsuyama had great odds. So JT, your boy, great odds. But man, I tell you, I got these new Titleist irons. I made the switch out of my CBs. Got the new T100s. From everything that I can tell, within a 5 foot area of the ball flying,
you're pure in it.
Yeah, pure in it, and feels great. A little softer on the hands. I noticed a couple times when I would typically hit one thin with my old irons, my hands would just absolutely hurt. Had a couple of those close hosel rockets. Nothing too bad, but the pain wasn't there.
And I saw you hosel rocket one into the screen.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely have one of those every now and then when you're working on the downswing. But overall, man, pretty stoked to put these in play. And buddy, you're Mr. Ping. You're Mr. Whatever.
I got everything now.
And now
I got like one from every brand right now.
You're going with the strong forward.
Strong forward. See, my problem was I have a 3-wood. It's a 13-degree. And it's just, how often are you going to use a 13-degree 3-wood? Like, it's 275, 280. How many of those do you have in a round of golf?
Yeah.
Not very often.
Right.
So that's why I wanted to have a little bit more friendly of a yardage golf club.
Yeah.
And so we went with the 14-degree. Or no, it's actually a 16.5 degree, turned down 1 degree, and got the Ventus TR black 7X in there. which was a nice upgrade, I came to find out. So I got the Titleist in. So I got that. Got the Vokey wedges. Those are my new sticks.
I love it.
I can't switch drivers, dude. I cannot switch drivers.
Well, you hit your driver, honestly, so well anyway. So what are you going to gain for that? I don't know. If you saw the news earlier in the week, John Rahm made a comment about Liv switching to 72 holes, which I thought was a pretty polarizing statement, especially since Liv was built on the notion of no cuts, three rounds. And for this guy to come out and say something to that effect, I don't know if it'll have any weight on right. anything moving forward, but that was a pretty profound statement, I feel. What do you think?
I mean, which one is it, bud? Like, you want to come in and redo the tour yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Like, go start your own tour. But I do agree. I mean, four rounds, you're going to truly find out who the best player is. A little crunch, a little pressure doesn't hurt anybody.
Right.
As we just saw with my southpaw that I picked this week and to win this past weekend, he went into a few extra holes, and that's four rounds, dude. You find out truly who the best player is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't disagree.
And to more serious news, we got to give a little moment of silence, or at least our thoughts and prayers to Colt Ford. Mm-hmm. Good friend of the podcast, opened so many doors for Jonathan and I, suffered a heart attack last weekend, and hate to see it, man. Hate to see it.
There's not a person better than Colt Ford. He's truly an amazing guy.
Amazing.
When I got wind of this, I obviously have been filling you in. I've been talking to his son a little bit, and I feel terrible about this. He's such a good guy, and we're thinking about you, buddy.
Yeah.
Hang in there.
Every day. And last but not least, I got to say congratulations to Mason Williams, the Bridgeport native. I mean, this kid, I remember him hitting balls on the range of Pete Dye when he was shorter than me. Now he stands over me and looks at me like I'm a third grader. But playing his first Korn Ferry event this past weekend, top-10'd it at the Club Car Championship with a score of 10 under par. Mason, congratulations, buddy. I can't wait to see you blossom.
And that's awesome. Saw a teammate of his, Stephen Fist, won the thing. So a good week for Georgia Southern.
Yeah, and Ben Carr was right in the mix, too. So good stuff for our peripheral friends. And today's episode, though, man, it's a biggie, right? I mean, we have a legend on Chasing Birdies today in Mr. Lee Trevino. Had a great weekend at Nemacolin. So again, thank you to Nemacolin for the generosity and the sponsorship that we have. But man, hearing some of these stories with Lee, it just takes you back. I know we weren't really alive in some of those eras of being able to watch him. But again, he's mentioned amongst the best of them, the greatest.
I mean, you look at who he's talking about, who he has played against, Jack Nicklaus, Mr. Palmer, Ben Hogan. The list goes on and on of golf greats that his name gets brought up with a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Mr. Palmer story at Laurel Valley, which is in our backyard, with the Ryder Cup. What a hilarious story that you're going to hear about him and the beers. Just so much. The guy is 84 years old. Number one, he looks amazing.
Yeah.
He talks nonstop. You say one word, he's taking the story for 10 minutes. It's amazing. It was such a cool experience. And we say we have great guests. This is truly a great listen today about the history of golf.
Yeah. So let's just turn this thing over here on Chasing Birdies to Lee Trevino. And we hope y'all enjoy this one. Thank you all for listening out here. Chasing Birdies podcast, Ryan Bashower, Jonathan Pepe, and we're joined by a legend today, Mr. Lee Trevino, here at Nemacolin Resort. Thank you to Nemacolin for putting on this great, spectacular day, and thank you for showing up. And welcome on the show.
I'll tell you, I never had a clue that this was here. This is absolutely gorgeous. I'm, you know, Daly was trying to tell me about it once, and I, and then Mr. Hardy, I knew that owned the lumber company and whatever, was a good friend of Daly's, and had him out here as a representative. But I've never gotten this way. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I knew we were going somewhere, and it was kind of out of the way because I flew into Pittsburgh, and then It took me an hour and 20 minutes to drive here, and there wasn't much traffic. So I said, well, it can't be too much out there. And then I got here, man, and I looked at this place, and I said, oh, my, oh, my. And I thought the driver was lost because he went by the big buildings. And I said, where are you going? And at the hotel? He said, no, that's the casino. Holy moly. I said, I had no clue. And then they told me that Pete Dye had done the golf courses. I mean, it's
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Place.
It's beautiful. It's a, you know what? It's a hidden jewel. I mean, we don't know too much about this place. Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah,
and it attracts a lot of people from all over the world.
Well, see, and that's
here in Farmington.
Yeah. Well, they're not here today, but anyway,
it is a special place. I mean, like you said, the two Pete Dye golf courses—they're great. One is a championship course. They had the PGA Tour event here, and Shepherd's Rock's new. But there is a little something for everyone here, even if you're not a golfer. So. But we are golfers, and that's why we're here.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. I'm just looking at it. I mean, this training academy that you have here is just absolutely second to none that I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah.
I mean, all the equipment that you have here and the fitting that you have. As I was doing earlier, and we were talking about equipment, which that's what I'm a big freak at. I'm a freak at the equipment. I know what a shaft does to a golf club. I'm not much into the club head as I am the shaft.
The shaft.
And I was just looking at the line of shafts that they have there.
Enough, huh?
Oh, man. I mean, I could go nuts right there. I mean, I dropped dead trying all those shafts.
But back in the day, it was like a steel shaft. That was it. It was a steel shaft, right? Or did you, back in the day, did you have S400 or X100?
I'm going to tell you something. When I started playing in 1967, latter part of 1967, I started the tour. We had no idea what a uniform set of shafts were on a golf club. When we broke a club, we put another shaft in it. We had no clue if it was a regular or a stiff or a double X. We had no clue.
Just
we had no idea what the weight of the shaft was. As a matter of fact, before they came in with the rule that you cannot bend a club 5 inches above the sole of the club, we used to hook the ball, and then we'd bend the shaft to open the club up on our knee. And, I mean, it looked like a bow down there when we were hitting it. But we had no clue about shafts. I mean, the shaft's everything. That's the whole motor of the club because it gets you at puts the right spin on the ball. It elevates the ball to get it higher so you'll stop it. I mean,
the right shaft could do everything. That's what I just hit some shots, and he – took me from 4,500 spin to down to 3,100 spin on a 5-wood. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference just by a shaft. Like you said, the club head doesn't necessarily matter.
No, it doesn't.
It's everything's in the shaft.
It's the shaft. The shaft is the kick of the shaft. And also, one of the things that people have to be very careful with, as I mentioned it earlier, is that most golfers are starting to go to longer shafts. And that's a mistake because I go on the theory that the body is the trunk of the tree and that your arms are the limbs. And anytime the trunk of the tree slows down, the limbs are going to come over and you're going to release faster. You're never going to do it twice the same. You understand? So if you go longer with a shaft, it takes it a little bit longer to get to the ball, and plus your body actually slows down so you can pull that big club down. You know, you have a 36-inch pitching wedge is a little too much for me. 35 three-quarter, maybe 36-inch, 9-iron, half-inch increments up. But, yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, you're talking about spin. I got to tell you a little story about Sam Snead and I were talking about that one time about Greg Norman. Remember, he led all four major championships one year. On the same year, he led all four championships going to the last round, but he never won one. And one of the reasons that he did that is simply because they put the flags deep on him. And Norman trapped that ball. Remember, his right foot went back like Scheffler. And the right foot came back, and he got inside on that ball, and he put the maximum spin on that ball. And it would hit the green, spin back 30 feet. Hit the green, spin back 30 feet. And I was telling Sam Snead this. I said, you know, I think he could have won two of them if he'd have just – bumped and run. Don't go with that wedge. Mm-hmm. Go with a 9-9. Go with an 8-9. Go with a pitching wedge. And go lower and bump it. Bump it back there. And he said, well, he says he doesn't know what to do. And I said, what do you mean? Well, what would you have done? And Snead says, Sam was the best. Sam says, take two practice swings. He says, deep practice swings. He says, fill the grooves up full of dirt and then hit your shot. I've never tried it, but it must work because Snead says, oh, he said, we did that all the time. Well,
yeah.
Speaking of Sam Snead, I think you guys ran into each other at the Greenbrier one year. Why don't you tell the story about your grip, what he told you?
We played in the King's Calcutta with Zambos and Ricky Mack and
all the guys.
Yeah. That's what I was telling. I was telling Daniel. We were talking about it. We were reminiscing about that not too long ago, but I'm standing on a tee box getting ready to hit my tee shot, and Lee comes over and says to me, boy, he said, you riding a Honda? I said, what do you mean? He said, your left hand looks like you're riding a motorcycle right now. He said, you ain't hitting that thing right ever. And I said, well, golly. I said, I got a legend telling me about my grip. So I have since tried to fix that. But I still think about that.
That's okay.
But you mentioned the Hardy family, Mr. Hardy. And in your early days growing up in Texas, there was a gentleman, or was it Hardy Greenwood?
Hardy Greenwood, yeah.
And, you know, so there's the Hardy name kind of is synonymous with you in a certain way. Sure, so. Yeah. Going back to Texas back then, I know your grandfather was a grave digger.
Right.
He grew up in what you said you didn't know you were
cotton farm poverty
till you were out of the Marines.
Right, right.
But you fell in love with the game of golf. So in the early days, touching on that, kind of how did you fall into golf in that respect?
Well, I was looking for a job, and I dabbled with it a little bit in the Marine Corps, not a lot. And I dabbled with it a little bit as a caddy before I went in the Marine Corps, so I knew about it. But I never thought I would ever make a career out of it or even play. I didn't even really had golf tournaments.
Yeah,
you know, like I told you, I didn't know Snead and Palmer and Nicholas, and I mean, this is in the early '60s. I have no clue who the hell they were. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I went to work as a labor crew. I welded the irrigation system for the Colombian Club on the new nine holes. And that's what we did all winter. And it was muddy. It was cold. And we actually had to get a bulldozer to pull the truck around. In other words, to weld the pipes. It was bad. And then I started playing there the next spring a little bit as I was working. And then I went to work for Hardy and practiced for 4 years, entered my first golf tournament and won it. Won the first tournament I ever played in.
And that was the Texas State Open?
Yeah, you know, I only played the tour 13 years. I won 29 times in six majors in 13 years. I won the PGA at Shoal Creek coming out of the tower. I was working in the tower. I wasn't even on the tour at the time. And I practiced and played a couple of tournaments, and I came down and I won the PGA in 84 at Shoal Creek. But I've always been a nut, you know. I'm a nut. I'm like a duck. I don't know what lake I'm getting up to tomorrow. I don't know where I'm going. That's why I have Daniel taking care of me here, and my wife takes care of me there. And I like action. I'm a 12-year-old trying to get out of an 85-year-old body.
Well, you look.
That's
great.
What it is.
I tell you what.
Yeah. Oh,
and and to see what has become of you is incredible. Especially, I mean. You talk about the guys like Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Lee Trevino. It doesn't go without saying. And it's an incredible story for not.
The name gets mentioned with all of them. And Ben Hogan.
Yeah. So you said at some point that you could just make the golf ball do whatever you wanted it to do. All you got to do is feel your body a different way.
Yeah. All I have to do is think of the shot.
That's it.
And I don't care if my right foot's in the back of the left one or in front of the left one. I don't care if I have a wide stance, a narrow stance. I don't care if my body, my weight's on the right or the left. It doesn't make any difference to me. I think of the shot that I want, and I make my hands do it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, you know, I don't want it to sound like I was bragging. I mean, I didn't win every golf tournament.
I mean, you had a pretty good run.
Huh?
You had a pretty good run.
Yeah, but I didn't win every golf tournament. But I had, It became easy to me. It wasn't hard. If I putted decent, if I putted well, my weakest part of the game was the putter. I could drive it with the best. Nobody could, for the exception of Seve, maybe Hubert Green was the best wedge player I ever come up against. But I could play a wedge. When you can play a bunkers, there wasn't too many people. Gary Player is probably the only one. He taught me how to play bunkers. My weakness was the putter. I took the putter too far away, and I decelerated. And when I was on, that year of 71, when I won the U.S. Open, Canadian Open, the British Open, all in a row, those 3 weeks in a row.
That's insane.
The hole looked like a bucket, you know, and I putted well. And everybody will tell you that if I putted well, couldn't beat me. And I felt that way. And you're supposed to feel that way. That's what confidence is all about. You understand? It's all. You don't flaunt it, but you know it. That's all. Yeah.
Would you say that the British Open was the coolest major for you to win, or do you think the U.S. Open would top that?
Well, being from America, it's always your Open. It's always the U.S. Open. There's no question about that in my mind. I think the Open Championship is second. The PGA is third. Augusta's fourth in my mind. I actually think that I think that the TPC should be in there somewhere. TPC has the best feel of all. Nobody has a better feel than the TPC. Yeah, the tournament players has the best feel of all of them. The weakest feel of all is Augusta. Always has been. It's never going to change because it's an invitational. See, and they invite the amateur champion from Chile and wherever, and they
Taiwan champion,
whatever. And then these poor bastards that are playing, trying to play and make a living, don't get in. Yeah, that's crazy. There's guys out there that have supported this game that are Americans that have tried to get into Augusta, and you know they come real close and not able to get in there. Yeah, I actually think that it is they have the top players. In other words, no question about it. They have the top. They'll have the top 50 there, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But now after that, it gets a little weak. Augusta does, yeah.
So you mentioned 1971. You had that incredible year. In 1975, something happened to you that was, I mean, life-changing it could have been when you were struck by lightning on the golf course in a tournament.
Well, the good Lord needed a partner. You understand? They were looking for a partner. And I told him there was already enough. I told him there were already enough golf pros up there, so he brought me back. But I did have a, believe it or not, when I got hit and it lifted me up off the ground and I couldn't breathe, and I knew that I was dying, and I had a, you know, I saw the light. I saw the light. It looked like I had a out of body experience, and when I came to, I'd been on the ground about an hour, and the ambulance was already there, and they took me to the doctor. I was in the hospital, and I remember what the hospital said to me. The hospital said to me, "We don't know what to do because we've never had anybody with a lightning strike come in here." So they usually go right by here down to the morgue. They don't come here. And so I never forget, though, when my wife was on the phone, they got her on the phone, and she says, "How you doing?" You know, everybody says to me, says, "What's the experience? When you get hit by lightning, what does it feel like?" And I said, "You're not going to believe this, but I'm sitting on my bag." They had a rain delay. And I'm sitting on my bag, and Jerry Hurd and Mike Fetchick was playing with me. And I'm sitting on the bag, and I heard this ringing in my ears, like two ball peen hammers hitting together and going, and it got louder and louder. And then all of a sudden I looked down, and I'm not on the ground, and I'm stretched out like this, shaking, and I'm about a foot off the ground, and my feet are way out, and my arms are way out like this, and I'm going, can't breathe, and I passed out. And I passed out. And my wife's on the phone after I get to the hospital, and she says, "How you doing?" I said, "You ain't gonna believe this." And she says, what is it? I said, I was 6'2 for the first time in my life. And she says to the doctor, he's okay. I was 6'2, baby. It had me stretched out there. I told him, I said, these pants are too short. I got to get some longer pants.
Oh, man.
The so things that I've gone through.
How long did it take for you from the lightning strike to get back to the game of golf?
Well, you have to understand that I love this game. I mean, you can see it now. I'll be 85 mm-hmm. in December, and I go to the golf course every day. Mm. And I spend a couple hours a day out there chipping, putting, hitting balls. I very seldom play. Very seldom. I'll play three holes and go have a bowl of soup or something. But I just absolutely can't get away from it. I can't get away from it. This is my deal. This is my whole deal. It'll be this way forever. I'll never stop. Nothing would please me more than if I'm in the bunker and I leave it in there and I fall over.
Yeah.
You understand? I don't get it out of the bunker mm-hmm. and fall over, throw some sand over me and forget about it. Yeah.
I mean, the way that you've interacted with people today, you can tell you still have a passion for the game of golf and teaching it.
I don't know everything about the game of golf, but as I told my caddy one time when he went to see me, and I did a talk, and we were talking about equipment in the golf swing, and I had about 300 people in the audience, and my caddy Herman says, you know, a lot of that stuff ain't true that you said. I said, Herman, 95% of those people out there don't have a damn clue of what I was talking about anyway. I said, so just leave it alone.
Yeah, we don't know any different, right?
No, you don't know any different. Listen, if you knew any different, you'd be a better player. See, but golf everybody thinks that it's a ball with a stick. It's not. It takes a tremendous amount of concentration. But you have to know the mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. And the ball will tell you exactly, when you see the ball in the air doing whatever it's doing, it tells you everything that you did wrong here. And it's usually this mother right here, the right hand. The ball be out of position a little bit. If everything is doing well and you're moving the ball to the left, chances are the ball's too far forward. Move it back. People love, if you notice, most people that play golf today play the ball too far forward. Why? Because they literally think that they're going to get the ball in the air. But the ball actually goes lower because the club's already working up before it catches the ball. And they're blading it. They're hitting it to the right. You understand? Because it's too far forward. You know, I'm a big advocate of playing the ball back. I like
even with your driver? Like, how far back are you playing on a driver?
Depends on the driver will tell you where the position will be if you keep the shaft of your club and your forearm in a straight line.
Okay.
Now, if you do this and you address, then that ball may be anywhere. You certainly can't play it back if you're here.
Right.
There's no way. If your wrist is cupped when you're addressing the ball, that ball's way forward. You know, good player going to duck hook it. A bad player is going to fade it because he can't reach it. So what happens? So this has got to come out. I explained it as I explained it in there before. I tell people, I says, listen, take a slow motion swing. I don't care where your hands are. Put the club down. And then I want you to take a slow motion swing, and I want the club to stop at a ball. Stop at the ball. Always have a club in your left hand. Never. Putter's the same way. People go in with a putter, they go. And then they put this one in there. And there's a break in there. There's a break. Anytime there's a break here, that's got to come out. And some guys can deal with this because they rotate, but they're not consistent. If you want to be consistent, when you hit this golf ball, in other words, this left wrist has to be straight when you hit it. It has to be straight. If you look at these players that are playing today, they're taking the club to the left. and what they're doing when they take the club to the left. Now, see, this is Todd. I can tell his waggle every time. This has got to be Todd. See how he went left? Mm-hmm. The faster he can get over to the left, the quicker he could. Oh, my God, go in. I didn't call
that. Almost aced it.
That was almost.
The faster he can go over to the left, the easier it is for him to hold this angle. If this left hand goes down the line, it will do this to you.
And you're going
to
tug
you've it. You've got to take it to the left. And everybody wants to look at the ball. There was a gentleman just hitting balls there, and I told him, I said, why don't you hit one and look up? He couldn't believe how good he hit it.
Anika, David look Duvall. Up.
The greatest.
Pretty good ball strikers.
Yeah. And what happens is people concentrate on the ball, and they're looking down, and they hit the ball. Then after they hit it, they look up. If they did that with a putter, they'd be better putters.
Well, that's to talk about putting.
It's the opposite. In putting, you're not supposed to look up.
Well, they say even in putting, a close friend is Bob Rotella, and he talks about close your eyes and actually feel the putter and feel and stroke it.
I putted a lot of putts with my eyes closed.
Because the difference if you
I have
see
the
it
lab not? Putter. The lab putter is the one that I use the eyes closed because I don't want to whiff it. That thing's like a nine. That putter, the lab putter is the blade is about as long as a number nine shoe.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not going to whip it. I do. It'd be amazing how good I putt with that thing. It's a
they
lab
say it's
putter.
Like cheating.
And there, I put it down, I close my eyes, and I hit it. It's perfect.
So you mentioned about the striking of the ball, and there's a lot of people that don't even know this name, and he was probably one of the best ball strikers of all time, and that's Mo Norman.
Oh, my God, he's my buddy.
And Mo Norman, I got to see Mo Norman hit balls every year at Pine Needles.
Yeah.
He came down there. And Mo, for those of you that don't know, Mo Norman, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, he was homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to a point where Titleist would give him a monthly stipend.
That was the greatest thing I ever saw, man. And he did it late in life.
It was a little too late. But Titleist, the Acushnet company, would give him monthly payments. And he lived out of his car. He was from Canada. And this guy... I mean, you talk about it. The Mo Norman was incredible.
I'm the only one he ever had dinner with. I knew that Mo, when he was a young boy, he actually got hit by a car. And he got hit in the head by a car. Everybody said, oh, he was in the refrigerator and all this. No, no. He had two sisters, if I'm not mistaken, and Mo got hit by a car. And Mo said everything three times.
Mm-hmm.
And people, some people made a little... You know, the guy, I liked him. I loved him because he was an underdog like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I took up with Mo. And Mo would say, how you playing, Mo? I'm good, 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 good. I said, you want to play a few holes? I'll play. And he got there. We were playing Royal Oaks in Florida. And he stood on the first hole. No lie. Stood on the first hole. And he hit wedge off the tee. And then he hit driver on the green. And I said, Mo. Well, what was that? He said, they say there's holes, driver wedge. He said, I went wedge driver. Same result. But I've watched him hit golf balls. His grip was palm on palm. He didn't interlock or overlap. He took the club back. He didn't pronate the club. He didn't cock his wrist or nothing. He just lifted it up and went through it. It looked like a rocking chair. But he could take a 5-iron from 165 yards, and you could put a blanket out there on that driving range. And if he hit 25 balls, 20 of them would be on that blanket. He was the most amazing player. He has, to this day, I think he still has more course records in Canada
than anyone.
I'm so proud of the Canadian PGA finally recognizing him late in life. And Titleist ended up giving him $5,000 a month, if I'm not mistaken, correct, because he had been so... You know, he'd been with him for so long. I was at Gibbs Repair Shop once in Orlando.
Mm.
Mo drives up in his Cadillac.
He had that white cat.
He had a yellow one. I think it was yellow and white. And he drives up in the Cadillac, and I'm sitting there having some grips put on. And there's a guy in the room, and he's looking out, and he's looking at Mo. And Mo's got the trunk up. And the guy says, look at this guy here. He said, now, what does he want? I said, who are you talking about? He said, that guy there. I said, that guy can play right there. He said, not that guy. And I'll never forget it till the day. He had a pair of pants on, yellow, like this tablecloth. he had worn them so much without getting them clean, like you said, he was homeless, that the top of the pocket of his right side was black. In other words, it's just black from reaching in and out, reaching in and out. Not lying to you. I says to him, I said, you see that guy there? I said, yeah. He said, he's getting some clubs. He's coming in here. He says, yeah. Huh? I said, let me tell you about this guy here. I said, this guy here may be one of the best ever. He said, not this guy. I said, what? I said, I'll tell you another thing. I bet you $100 that he's got at least $10,000 in his pocket. And the guy says, that guy? I said, Mo. I said, watch him. So Mo walks in. I see him right now. And Mo says, how you doing, bro? How you doing, bro? I said, I'm good, Mo. How you doing? Good. I said, Mo, I got a bet here. You got to help me out. What do you need? What do you need? What do you need? I said, I bet this guy that you've got $10,000 in that pocket. Oh, no. Oh, no. He says, oh, no.
This is him.
I said, Mo, I'm not going to lose this $100. Oh, no. He reached in his pocket, and he pulled out his money, and he threw it on the floor. And, I mean, it was a wad of hundreds like this, and they went all over the floor. The guy didn't even count it. He gives me $100. He didn't even count it. Mo was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I played the, you know, there's so many stories about him. I don't know whether they're true. I just know the stories that I had with him. There was one about Augusta where he was playing Augusta, believe it or not, and they came out and got him and told him he had to take a caddy, and he says, oh, no. And he said, I won't take a caddy. And he was going in. He quit. And they finally gave him a caddy. He was the best.
At Pine Needles, I have the video somewhere, but my dad asked him, who's the best ball striker of all time? And he said, next to me? He said, Ben Hogan was pretty good at it. I mean, he was so quirky. I mean, if he walked in right here, you would be like, this guy? And he could just hit the ball.
He was stout, though.
Oh,
he was strong.
Hands were...
You didn't want him to get a hold of you.
Knee cleavers.
He'd break you in two.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. What was he, 5'8", maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Him and Basher about the same height, probably. Just a little...
He's got
Mo
me
was a little
bit.
Wider.
Yeah.
He could really strike the ball. He wasn't a long hitter because he was palm on palm, so he never released the club. Everything was a rocking chair. So he was... in other words, he was restricted to his club head speed was only going to be as fast as his arms and body could move. There was no release, none whatsoever, down at the bottom.
So it's a good the release point for amateur golfers. Not to change the subject, but that's a really good point that I think a lot of people, when you hear that releasing a club, it translates almost to breaking a wrist at the ball. But that's not what that is.
No.
And I think, you know, it's kind of interesting that you brought that up because you do have to release the club, but it's not at the ball
no,
with the wrist.
No, it's
past.
Exactly. It's catching the fly.
And that's what these guys do so well.
They do it very well. They're catching the fly. You know, there's been – the game has gotten so commercial that it's gotten to where there's so many inventions out there that people can see this second by second. And you can show a player what the club is doing. Back in the old days, you didn't know what that club was doing. You know, you just did what you had to do. But now they can tell you the spin, and that gives you the elevation. And they can tell you no, they take good. Like my son came home one day and he says, "Dad," he says, "I'm kind of, you know, -2 coming in, and I'm trying to get to +3." I said, what is this, a math test or what? What are you talking about? And I had no clue that he was talking about the club going away from the ball. And they said that Rory, the reason that Rory launches the ball so far is not only does he release it, but he releases it at +5. And that's so he tech. Can play with a 9, he can play with an 8-degree driver.
Yeah.
He's still launching it so
because
he's
high. Adding 5.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and that's
and that's why it's at 360.
He can't hit my 11 and a half, and he hit himself in the nose. He hit himself in the jaw with it. Yeah, so this is, I don't know anything about that. I couldn't turn one on. I still have the flip phone. I'm the only guy in this building right now that doesn't have a phone. Guarantee it. And maybe those two little kids might not have one. But I have a flip phone. I have the original. I'm on my second one now. And I had to order it. They didn't have it at the store. AT&T says, oh, we don't carry that, but we can order it. That's
it's
a good
been out
give
of
me
stock
one.
For years.
Give me one.
You know, sitting here in Farmington, we're not too far from Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And over there in Latrobe was was the birthplace and the
Ryder Cup.
Mr. Palmer. Yeah. And, you know, again, getting back to the early days of your career, in the middle of your career, you had a chance to play with Mr. Palmer and Mr. Nicholas and these guys. And looking back, I mean, any specific memories in your mind off the top of your head of Arnie or Jack that really resonates with you? I know you and Jack went in an 18-hole playoff in 71 at was it Marion?
Marion.
But took care of him, huh?
Yeah, we loved Arnie so much that we were his children. And that's the way we looked at it. We looked at it as we were his kids. Whatever Arnie wanted, we did it. You understand? Uh-huh. Arnie was the pathfinder. He's the one started it down in Florida to where he'd tell these guys, if you come in the clubhouse, you have to take your hat off. Can't wear a hat in the club. The little pro did that out in California many, many years ago. And these guys, the first thing they do is slap that hat off. Nobody ever questioned it down there. But we did everything. I remember one time after we'd all retired, I guess, or something. I was still on tour, but I think I had just started the senior tour. And he was raising money for Winnie's hospital, children's hospital. And he called me himself at home, and he says, I got a deal for you. I said, what is it? And he says, I'm doing a pro-am. It's going to be four of us play an exhibition at Latrobe for the hospital, Children's Hospital. And he says, I want you to be one of the guys to play. I said, yes, sir. And he said, we always called him sir. Always called him sir. And I said, yes, sir. He says, what's it going to cost me? I said, you know, you're starting to make me feel bad. I said, what are you talking about? I said, you are asking me what I'm going to charge you to come and do a day for you for the hospital? Are you crazy? My wife will kill me if you give me a quarter. I said, I'll pay my own way. Don't worry about it. And it was Arnie and I and Duvall, and I can't remember the fourth. We had a hell of a time. We had the Ryder Cup there. He was the captain. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. That was the only time that the Ryder Cup, tonight we'll talk about that. It's a good one. That was the only time that we won the Ryder Cup in three rounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Laurel Valley.
Yeah, we played four rounds. See, at that time when Arnie was the captain, the point system was 32 instead of 28. But they made a mistake with it because you could win it outright. In other words, without having to play the last round. So we played two rounds on Sunday. That was when Nicholas lost twice to Brian Barnes. You remember on the 17th hole, 2-1? And just to tell you how much they are with the Ryder Cup, it's a different story over in Europe with the Ryder Cup. They live and breathe the Ryder Cup. And the reason for it is they're still talking about Brian Barnes beating Arnold Palmer. And that's been 49 years ago. And they still talk, oh, yes, he says. Yes, the big one. Nicholas took the bear down, 2-1. What the hell are you talking about? You don't want no steady diet of Jack. I don't care who you are. But, that happened. Yeah, we won in three rounds.
Yeah. So
what did you guys do on Sunday?
We had to play.
Oh, you just played for shits and gigs.
Well, let me finish the story. I didn't want to finish the story, but I will. So I'm in the locker room, and we've already won it. And Arnie walks in. You know, he's clapping his hair, boys. Yeah, dang it, you played great and everything. He said, Trevino, you're first up. I said, Arnie, I've played 5 days in a row, man. I've played 5 matches. I said, you got guys that haven't played in 2 days. I said, put them in. It doesn't make any difference. We've already won. No, no. He said, the governor's waiting on you on the first tee. Holy moly. I said, okay. Really? He said, yeah. Come on. You're my man. Go on out there and get him. I said, whom am I playing? And he says, you're playing a guy named Norman Wood. Never heard of him. And never heard of him since. And I heard that he was a pro in a small club in Scotland, which I should go see him someday because he played awfully well. And I said, oh, man, okay, I'm tired. I'm really tired. And they got the long benches, right, the old benches. And I sat there and I straddled that bench, and everybody else was taking their shoes off, putting them on and everything. Arnie's standing there. I said, listen, is the locker man over there? He said, yeah. I said, I'll tell you what. How much time do I got? He said, you got 30 minutes. I said, tell him to bring me 6 rolling rocks. So he brings me a 6-pack of rolling rocks, and I inhale 4 of them in 20 minutes. And then I go out there, and the governor's waiting on me. And when I go out, the people are screaming, and the governor sticks his hand out, and I missed it. I used it as a joke. You know, I said, oh, my God, I missed his hand going by. I went right by.
Oh, shoot. That's hilarious.
Oh, my God. I said, I'm going to get killed out here. Anyway, to make a long story short, I turned the front 9-2 down, and Arnie was talking to a guy in the pavilion right next to the 10th tee there. And Arnie says, how you doing? I said, I'm 2 down. Wait, right there. So I waited right there, and he goes into the pavilion, and he gets me 2 rolling rocks. And and hands them to me over the fence. He says, enjoy yourself. I said, okay. So I got beat 4-3, I think it was. But I had a ball. He was a great captain, though. We played hard for him, boy. We need him now.
Oh,
we need Tigers, who we need. We need
you
Tiger.
Want Tigers that, yeah. As the captain?
I saw a little bucking in the troops. I saw a little bucking in the troops at in Italy. It didn't look like they were really wound up to do this.
Well, I mean,
and that's not a good thing. I didn't like it. I didn't like what I saw.
What,
I was
the
there
picks?
For the whole thing. I think Tiger could assemble a team. Going to where they're going to Black Page, right? Or Bethpage?
Bethpage.
I think if Tiger would do it, we give him the 12 picks.
I mean,
well, let him pick 12.
But my man Zach Johnson let the 6 guys pick the picks. He basically said, you guys let me know who you want on the team. And he left off the Keegan Bradley, who was hot at the time.
He's a killer.
Lucas Glover was hot at the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you left off 2 of the hottest players.
Yeah.
For
well, I had a team, too, one time, and I picked a couple of guys and stuff. I lost in 85, but it was a little different in 85, and I'll tell you why. Is because it was a 2-year qualifying. And you get a hot guy the first year, you'd get enough points to, you know, to survive the second year. And now you've got him on your team, and he hadn't busted a grape in a year.
Mm.
And there's nothing you can do about it, see? Because you could only invite 2 back then. I think Zach did okay. And you know, it's the old deal. If he'd have won, everything would have been fine.
We would have been great.
That's
the
whole thing.
Genius.
If he wins, oh, my God, he's a great captain. If he loses, oh, God, that's terrible.
They got throttled.
You know, the
though.
One thing that you have to understand, regardless of who captains those guys, the captain didn't play. The captain couldn't do anything. He didn't look at, in other words, he didn't have to beat anybody. He's just, the captain's the one that works the hardest. These guys just go there and get a golf bag and clothes, and they get clothes and whatever for their wives, and they give them round-trip tickets, and they do that, and they play 3 rounds of golf. That poor captain has to go through hell for 2 years.
Yeah. And pressure.
So question to you is, why is it so much more passion from the Ian Poulters, the Sergio Garcias?
It made their tour. The European tour wasn't all that big. The only way that they started really making and getting sponsors to pay more and more tournaments and this stuff is when they started beating these guys in the Ryder Cup and start beating America. I mean, come on. They've had it since 1927. And up until 1927 to 1970 or 85, they had won twice.
Yeah.
You understand? They were about ready to fold the tent, on, you know. They had never made a quarter on the Ryder Cup. You understand? Never made any money, the Europeans. And now they win a couple. The one that really set it off was I lose in 85. And Seve came on the scene, what, in 81 or 80, 81 maybe. And in 83, they lost by one shot, 1 point. And the Europeans were celebrating more than the Americans that had won. And the question was, why are the Europeans celebrating when they lost? And Seve says, ah, we got within 1 point of you, my friend. It's going to be different now. And he was right.
That was a turning point, yeah.
And he was right. And this is what happened. I mean, when you went there, if you'd have gone to Italy, you wouldn't have. We went into their locker room, and it was amazing. They had Seve plastered everywhere in that locker room.
In Europe's?
Yes. When we went to Italy there. Mm-hmm.
They had it in the shirt. They yeah. had the him that.
I'm telling you, we went into our locker room, had a ping pong table. I mean, come on. I would have put a putting green in there or something.
Yeah, something.
Chipping green, but a bunker. Just, you know, I'd have said, hey, give right. me a fake bunker and a putting green in here. The hell with a ping pong table.
It just doesn't look like they're ever fired up on the first tee, the Americans.
I saw a different mood there, and I didn't like what I saw. I don't know where it's going from there. Not my business. I'm a PGA.
Do you feel like
man.
Part of this is the live PGA Tour kind of separation type thing?
Oh, I don't know much about that live tour. I haven't kept up with it and everything, but I they've got five of our best players, I can tell you that. Other than that, I don't think they're much of a threat.
He signed a deal with Live.
I don't
think $1 million he gave him.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of a threat after you take those five. I actually think that I don't know this, and I actually think that now that they've gone profit, I think Liv will go away. That's my yeah. belief, and I'm entitled to it. I think they'll go away. I really do.
Well, something has to happen because you see the ratings on it everywhere. Even both sides of the story now are saying, hey, we got to come together and work because we're losing viewers. We're losing interest.
I'm just not going to turn on CW.
They don't draw anybody,
no.
Number one. I have no idea what hole they're on. They all tee off at 11 o'clock. They got shorts on.
Tons of music. People
I don't watch
out
it.
Playing.
I don't know who's leading. I don't know. They got they got things going everywhere. They got a lot of money.
Yeah.
I know that. But so do we. I think we're on a good path right now. I don't. They're supposed to have had these meetings here this recently, and nobody has said a word. I haven't heard anything because I'm a life member, and I get stuff on my phone, you know, my wife's phone, not mine.
Yeah, you're not even getting a text.
Mine gets lost real quick. But I don't know what's going to happen there. But you look at it, it's the same 48 players. They had 50-something the other day. It's the same 48-something players. It's turned out to be an exhibition, maybe.
A well-paid exhibition.
Yes, it's a well-paid exhibition. Oh, I don't look at the money thing about it. If you really look at it, if you really want to compare football, baseball, hockey, all the others, you got to take the best players. What's the best player in hockey getting? What's the best player in football are getting? We have a quarterback in Dallas that's getting $50 million and never won a game here. Well, he's still trying to win some Super Bowl, but anyway, if you look at it, and then you look at the golfer wasn't making the top player was making $11 million a year in prize money. Come on, and the top player in baseball,
oh my God,
what with the gap for the LA Dodgers? He got $700 million bucks or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
deferred it till. a lot of it until the end of his career, which he might have gambled away.
What I'm saying is I don't like for people to think that the golfers are overpaid. And they seem to think that simply because they pick up the newspaper and they look at what the guy won to win this golf tournament. He won $3.6 million. And they say, oh, my, oh, my. Well, let me tell you something. If you're from a big city and you've got a professional team there, yeah, you just paid $1.5 million to a guy that didn't even play this game. He sat on the bench. You see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. He didn't even play. And now you're screaming about this guy playing four rounds of golf, I mean, and doing all this. Let me tell you something. It must be pretty good because it's still there.
Yeah.
If it was losing money, it wouldn't be there.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. They don't care if they lose money, I guess, in some respect, with Liv. I mean, but it's, I don't know. It's certainly created some divisiveness, but or division.
I think it's going to go away. I think it'll eventually go away. Yeah. If they are gonna go together, mm-hmm. then we need those other five players. And you know what? And talking about a penalty and all this stuff. Nah, just leave it alone. Rory changed his whole tune.
He has.
I mean, Rory was really up against it, so it must be working pretty good. Mm-hmm. Must be okay. Yeah.
So, the logo on your shirt.
Yeah.
You got the jumping in the clothing space now.
Oh, this thing is my son.
Daniel, yeah, started, he was telling me about
You know, him. My son came and I'm going to retire stuff. And then he found these pictures. And, I mean, there's pictures of me winning the Open and stuff with this shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, not this one, but one like it.
I was going to say, you age pretty well now.
Yeah. And I'd have said, man, and he's gotten into this thing. And I'll tell you what, he's done a hell of a job.
Yeah.
And he's done very well. And we've got a lot of connections and stuff. It's a tough business, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to be whatever, but we think I have enough fans out there that'll look
Absolutely.
At it, you know, on the simply the majority of our business is on the internet, as you well know, on mm-hmm. the phone. And then we have a lot of connections with with some stores, some clubs and whatever in Texas.
Yeah. No, I love it. I wish you guys the
best.
We have
jackets and shorts and different shirts, and we have the hat is what we got most of it. I've had it copyrighted since 1967. I just never used it.
Here we go.
Yeah, I just never used it. And so that's what happens when you send a kid to USC and he gets a business degree. He said, yeah, man, you're blowing a lot of money. I said, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, Lee, it was awesome having a little bit of your time here.
Thank you.
Nemecol and chasing birdies. And we're gonna finish this up with a standard in our show called the Tap-In segment presented by Bettinardi Golf. And Jonathan's going to ask you four questions that demand your little quick-witted response. And
I don't know if he has the quick. I like the long response.
It doesn't have to be quick either. You could. Just
I like
keep,
the details.
I probably can't hear. I don't have my hearing aids yet. I probably can't hear what the hell he's asking me. But anyway, go ahead.
All right. The most intimidating player on tour when you played?
Was Jack. No question. The GOAT.
All right. One rule in golf that should change.
If you drive the ball in a divot in a fairway, you should be able to move it.
Amen.
I mean, this is the second podcast that we've done that people are saying this, so I agree with you. All right. We kind of went over this, but the best ball striker, Mo Norman or Ben Hogan?
I think Mo Norman was probably – Hogan was longer. But I think it might be a tie. It was pretty close.
Well, Ben Hogan – had a few majors too, so that kind of helps his cause.
Yeah, he had a couple. So, he had a couple of majors. You know, he won three majors in 1 year, and the only reason he didn't win the fourth one to win the Grand Slam is because he couldn't walk 36 holes, and he didn't play.
He's my all-time favorite player.
Yeah, he didn't enter. Yeah.
So, last question: what are you chasing in life or on the golf course, whatever it may be? What are you chasing?
I'm chasing in Dallas. I get up at 5:30, 6 o'clock, go to the gym, feed the bulldog, take it for a walk, have a little bowl of fruit, take a shower, go to the golf course at 10:30. I'm back home at noon, go in the gym, and I have a lazy boy in my gym, and I take a nap. And I take a nap. That's it. And I do this every day. And I tell people, says to me, says, what do you do now? I said, I do nothing, and I don't start that till noon. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Lee, thanks
Lee,
so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate awesome. Your time.
Thank you guys for listening, too. Thank you.
Well, buddy, we could officially say that we've interviewed another golf Hall of Famer.
Amen.
And yeah, that so was cool. Awesome. I love whenever I mention, not a lot of people know about Mo Norman.
Yeah.
So I loved bringing that up about and seeing what he thought about Mo Norman. And sure enough, Mo Norman was the best ball striker he's ever seen that nobody's ever heard of.
Do you know that they're coming out with a documentary on Mo Norman?
I saw that.
I was going to tell you that. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. And that's a great... Yeah,
it's a great story, man. It is truly a great story. I mean, I remember my dad at Pine Needles asking Mo Norman, who's the best ball striker? And as you heard in the interview, he repeats himself.
Three times.
Next to me. Ben Hogan. And the guy was so confident in how good he was, and it wasn't a classic swing, but it was really cool to hear that. And we forgot to thank Daniel, his son, for taking care of this, getting his dad, Mr. Trevino, everywhere he needed to be in a timely manner. He did an amazing job. Good luck to you and your clothing business. I love it. It looks cool.
Yeah. I'm going to cop a couple shirts.
The shirts look soft.
I was on the website. Yeah.
I like the logo.
Supermax, I think. Supermax Golf.
Supermax, the logo. So make sure you go check them out. It's cool. He's definitely chasing birdies in the clothing business. So
yeah,
shout out to him. What was your favorite part of it?
I mean, I think for me, just talking to someone that came through the ranks at a time when technology was limited and how he say he can do anything with the golf ball. Doesn't matter if his foot is in front of him, behind him, his wherever. He just had that ability to know, okay, this is what I got to do to make the ball do this. And the other thing that he brought up that is such a huge point that might get overlooked is that for us amateur golfers, or any golfer really, watching the ball leave tells you so much about your swing. If the ball is going left, ball is going right, low, high, whatever. There's so much information by being able to read the golf ball in the flight. And that's how these guys had to work back in the day. They literally got into the dirt and had to feel it out. They didn't have TrackMan to look at their launch angle or their attack angle. So that's just a cool thing. And then the second thing I'll say briefly is the fact that he admitted he was not a good putter. He said putting was his downfall. And you know, to have 6 major championships under the belt and be able to say that, it's a pretty big statement.
I mean, he won the U.S. Open, Canadian Open, and British Open 3 in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
And think about that. I mean, people don't realize he beat Jack Nicklaus in a playoff for the U.S. Open. So maybe Jack has 19. Maybe his career doesn't play out to what it was if he wins. I mean, there's so many things that could have happened, but... So cool. Again, thank you to the Trevino family. Truly, truly amazing. We hope you enjoyed your stay at Nemacolin as well.
Yeah, and you know, for us, it was an awesome experience. We had the podcast live in the Golf Academy at Nemacolin. And for you out there that aren't familiar with Nemacolin, make sure you go over to nemacolin.com. Check them out. The resort is 5-star across the board. The Learning Academy is 5-star across the board. The property itself, you won't find something up there that you or your family won't enjoy. So make sure you get on over to nemacolin.com, give them a look, book a stay. And I got to thank Chris Anderson, Chris Barron, Roxanne, all the golf staff there, Jaron, for you know, being so gracious in this past weekend at Nemacolin.
Fantastic. It was awesome. Thank you again, guys. Truly special place. And that's all he talked about, too. Even off air, he's just like, this is the fact that we have this in Farmington, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some other breaking news, which kind of hurts my heart a little bit, with John Calipari taking his talents over to Arkansas, the Razorbacks. Our boy Matt Stell is going to be ecstatic.
Yeah.
So we might start taking some more Razorback games. But hurts a little bit. But I think a change in Kentucky might be good.
Might be needed.
For everyone involved. And hey, I'm not, maybe I'm putting this out there a little bit, but maybe Bob Huggins isn't doing a whole hell of a lot right now.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Kentucky will take on the baggage. So that's the...
Well, I'll tell you what, bud. I love you to death, but first day of the Masters, you know where I'm going right now, bud. So
the golf course.
Yeah, with the rain. But yeah.
Make sure you go to chasingbirdies.com, chasing_birdies on Instagram. Stay tuned and go. Happy Masters weekend, boys and girls.
Yes. Thank you all for listening here on Chasing Birdies. Thank you to Evo and Ali over at Simpler Media for putting this thing together. Jacqueline DiPaterio, Rachel London for all your social media help. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Garrett Green and Nico Marischal here, WVU double-headed monster quarterbacks. I hope you guys have a great, safe weekend. Enjoy the Masters, and we'll catch y'all in 2 weeks.